Welcome everyone to our third Navigating Neurological Conditions webinar. I'm so glad you're here. I'm your host, Jenny Jesse, and I am a mom of a medically complex child and co-founder of the June Jesse Memorial Foundation. I'm on a mission to make lives easier for children with medically complex neurological conditions and their families. Thank you for taking time out of your day to be here. Our guest today is Megan Logan, author of the book, Self-Love Workbook for Women. Here it is right here. Megan has over 20 years of counseling experience in a variety of mental health settings, including domestic violence and sexual assault centers, an eating disorder program, and a local hospice program. For the past 10 years, she has enjoyed private practice, specializing in issues related to trauma, abuse, eating disorders, and grief and loss. Also joining us today is Allison Reichart, a June Jesse Memorial Foundation team member. Allison will serve as moderator for our discussion today. Today, Megan and I are going to talk about her book and how you can get the most out of it. Welcome, Megan, and welcome, Allison.
Thank you for having
me. Hi, everyone.
Okay, so Megan, I did share with you that we are including this in our month of June care packages and that we will be delivering them to caregivers at St. Louis Children's Hospital, and we're sending to people's homes all over the country. And I'm so excited that we are able to include your book in this, especially because self-care is such a huge issue for everyone right now, not just medically complex moms and dads. I came across your book, I think it was on Amazon or maybe even The Skim, something linked to it. And I just immediately was like, this looks so interesting. I loved the cover. I loved, I kind of flipped through it on Amazon and I immediately purchased it. And as soon as I picked it up, I thought this was something that the parents that we serve, the moms that we serve would really appreciate it. Especially because self-care, you know, it's such a buzzword right now, or it has been, and sometimes it can be stressful even before the pandemic to think of ways to take care of yourself and self-love. And that's where like self-love comes in, because it's one of the easiest ways to provide self-care to yourself, I think. So I'm excited to talk to you about it today.
First, I wanted just to say that I'm just completely honored that you would use my book for caregivers. That just touches my heart and is the kind of the coolest use of the book ever. So I want to thank you for doing that.
Well, let's get started. And Megan, I'll ask you the first question. What brought you to write this book? Is it based on your personal struggles and experience, or things that you've seen in your work, or both?
So it's probably a combination of both. I would say self-love has been a lifelong journey for me. I had an eating disorder in high school. I was sexually abused as a child. And so that kind of opened up about 10 years of my own therapy before I went to college and decided to be a therapist myself. So I definitely have gone through my own struggles with self-love. It's a never-ending journey. So just when I think I have it down and I've mastered it, something comes along and reminds me, you know, you still need to keep working on this. So even as I was writing the book, I had gone through a divorce and had recently started dating online again. And that wasn't very fun and was very difficult at times. And so some of the exercises were in the moment being created because of what I was going through. So it was kind of neat to do that. But also just as a therapist, working with women, primarily specifically with trauma and grief and loss and those kind of eating disorders, all of the self-love is at the root of all of those issues and problems. So the book was very easy to write. I did it in a month. It was, something that just kind of happened, spontaneously, and it just kind of flowed from my experiences as a therapist.
I love that you were able to pull from both your own experience and what you see in your practice.
Yeah.
Can you tell us go ahead.
No, I'll just say I'm a therapist, so I always say something after someone says something. It's really hard. So I just turn that off. I'll be quiet. Go ahead.
Will you tell us more about the concept of self-love and what it means and how it's related to the concepts of releasing self-doubt, building self-compassion, and embracing who you are?
So that's kind of the title of the book in there. And I think that self-love is an important step towards being able to know your greatest potential and all the things that you have to offer and give and share in the world. And when women come into my office and know that they're struggling with that, it's really hard to think of how do you get to that? What steps do you take to get to that place? And so one of the first steps is getting rid of those negative critical voices that have been internalized, the negative self-talk and the shame, things that we don't even realize that we're doing. And then after you've done that work, then you can kind of install some self-compassion, some feelings of being kind to yourself and building yourself up. And then from there, you identify your gifts and your strengths and make sure that your actions in your life are aligned with the values that you have. Those values are going to be different from everyone. And what's important to you might be different than what's important to me. As long as it's in alignment, that your life is in alignment with that, then, you know, you've allowed self-love to flourish. And at that point, then you can extend it outwards towards the rest of the world. It comes from within, and then it extends outward.
How would someone notice that they might want to focus on self-love, or how would someone start to recognize that negative self-talk happening within themselves?
So I think there's just a growing discontent inside. There's a resentment maybe that's building up. There's a negativity in the way that you look and view the world, stagnation in your life. You know, the more obvious ones are addictions and self-destructive behaviors and isolating from other people. But sometimes it's more subtle than that. It's people-pleasing and bending over backwards to make sure that everyone else is happy and taken care of before you even consider what your needs are, what you're wanting. Some women that I've worked with don't even know what they want or what their needs are. They it's like a completely foreign concept to them because they're so used to being the caregivers. So I think over time that starts to build up to a place where you lose yourself.
I think that's something so many people can relate to.
Yeah. So this was something, you know, when you talk about the negative self-talk, I don't know. For me personally, I don't feel like I noticed it as much until I became a parent, especially to my two boys, because I realized how I was talking to myself, or like if I made a mistake, I never would have like the self-talk in my head. I wouldn't have said that to my boys kind of things. And I was kind of noticing how I was taking some parenting classes and it was talking about like shame, like, you know, shaming and things like that, and why that's not a motivator, and, you know, all these other things. And I was kind of like, why am I doing this to myself then? You know, if I would never do this to my child. And I remember like that was like a big like click for me. And I also, you know, I think I said this earlier that Catherine, the therapist at St. Louis Children's Hospital, said that the higher level of self-care is treating yourself with the loving kindness that you treat other people. And to me, that just kind of clicked. And just for me, noticing the negative self-talk was a huge shift in self-love for me. And I just love how your book focuses so much on this. And I think it just highlights noticing the internal dialogue, just noticing it is just a huge step.
Yeah, sometimes I'll catch myself, I'll drop like a pen on the floor and I'll be like, Megan, you're klutz or you're an idiot. Yeah. Like, I dropped a pen. Yeah. I don't know why I'm so critical and negative. Or I remember when my daughter was 4 years old and I forget what was happening, but something was happening that she was frustrated and she said, this is ridiculous. And I was like, oh my gosh, apparently I say ridiculous a lot. Just that negative words that we say get... They're external voices sometimes of other people, criticisms of society, things that we feel like we're not good enough, measures that we have somehow internalized into our own narrative. And it's we don't know it. We don't realize it until you stop and listen to it and realize how destructive. We think that by shaming ourselves we're somehow going to make us feel better and motivate ourselves to do better. But normally it just makes us worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once you notice that kind of negative self-talk going on, what's the process that you work through with clients? Just kind of what are the stages you work through to develop the self-love and to reduce the negativity?
So whenever we're working with any kind of change, it's helpful to use this kind of this model of change that they use with addictions. So the first stage starts with pre-contemplation, and that's when you're like, I don't have a problem, I'm fine, you need to get off my back. So you're not really motivated or open to needing any help, kind of denial. And then there's the contemplation, that's when you're like, okay, I could really work on this. Like, I need to work on more self-love, but you're not ready to do anything about it. You're not really wanting to take action or put any work into it. Then there's the action stage. That's when you're like, yeah, I need to do something and I'm ready to take steps towards that. So identifying where somebody is really important when you're working with someone. If they're kind of just now flirting with the idea of taking care of themselves, but they have a lot of barriers, they have a lot of reasons why they can't do it, I'm not going to go full on into action mode with them. I'm going to get them talking about what their life could be like if they love themselves, like what things could look different, what are the barriers and how do we overcome some of those barriers? So that's kind of like from a therapy framework of how I would work with somebody. When you're working with just the internal work of self-love, the whole practice of self-love, this is going to sound really silly, but you have to have self-compassion and self-love while you're practicing the practice of self-love. So being able to be kind to yourself. If you don't do exercises, okay, you still have the book sitting on your nightstand, that's a start. You know, if you're just too tired and exhausted and you decide you need to rest, maybe that's exactly what you needed to do. And I think for moms of medically complex children, that cannot be emphasized enough. Right. Focusing on goals and what all the things that you have to do to be better. We don't want self-love to be a part of that whole mindset. And it's interesting because it can start to be like, well, what do I need to do to make sure I love myself and let me be good and do all these exercises? And that's not how the book is designed to be used.
Yeah. You don't want it to be another stress, you know, because that is something people would say it to me all the time. Make sure you're taking care of yourself. Make sure you're taking care of yourself. And then it felt like another to-do list thing. And that is a great reminder that sometimes the best way you can take care of yourself and love yourself is to just hear what your body's telling you. And if that's rest or not the workbook, then that's the best form of self-love that you can do. So
exactly. And just, you know, the workbook will be there. and it's not necessarily, it's set up a certain way to be able to do it, but it's fine to flip through it and be like, oh, this one's cute, I want to try this one, and just randomly pick a page and do that exercise. It doesn't have to be done, you know, in order necessarily, if that's not really how you're feeling like you want to use it. It can be, I know this is a later question.
Yeah.
It was coming up. It can also be used in order, where it's done exercise by exercise. The way it's set up was strategic in the sense that it's about, you know, exercises to help you identify the negative voice, and then exercises to get you more in your compassion, and then exercises to get you knowing your gifts and strengths. But it doesn't have to be done that way. I would probably, if I was doing it, it would sit on my nightstand for 3 or 4 months. And then one weekend, I'd be like, I need to work on self-love. And then I do the whole workbook on a Saturday night.
So that's helpful, Megan, that you're noting that you don't have to work through it in a certain way. It doesn't have to go in chronological order. You can kind of pick and choose where you would start working. Is there a specific exercise in the book or a couple that you would recommend as a good starting point, specifically for moms of medically complex kids? Or is there something you would tell them as they're getting started to get them started on the right path?
I would probably say start at the beginning. That's always a good place to start. The introduction, I don't do a whole lot of narrative in the book because the whole point is for you to focus on yourself, not necessarily all my little thoughts. But in the beginning, I do a little bit more narrative, and it's kind and it's sensitive, and it's kind of structured that way to kind of be supportive. So I would encourage people, I think in the early on, it talks about how to start your self-love journey. And it gives ideas on, I don't know, getting color pencils and setting up a time and a place where you do it. And just your willingness to be vulnerable, that is uncomfortable. I know I joined so there was somebody who was doing a book club and she contacted me about speaking at it, I guess, like a Zoom call. And I was like, okay. And then the women were so awesome that I joined the book club and now I meet with them every week. I do my own exercises and they are hard. Some of them are really hard. Some of them are really uncomfortable. So I would say for just to start slowly, start easy, to just be gentle with yourself and realize like this is not something that's meant to be done in a day. It's not meant to be done in a weekend. It's not even meant to be done in a workbook. It's the workbook gives strategies and tools to continue to use throughout your life. I would probably say if I did this, I've grown a lot in a year and some of these exercises were inspired by my own struggles last year. Yeah. They're not struggles anymore this year. And so the exercises would be completely different in a year's time.
Yeah. What would you advise someone when they find an exercise that is difficult for them or it brings up some difficult emotions? How would you advise them to kind of work through that stage and process those feelings?
The one thing that I love about the book club is it's these women that are all getting together from different walks and different places and supporting each other while they're going through some of the exercises. So it's really kind of cool to see it done in a group setting. But I think having, if you're getting triggered by some of the exercises, it's okay to take a break from it. It's okay just to notice, okay, that one was really uncomfortable for me. That brought up some stuff from my childhood, or that brought up something that I don't want to have to think about right now. And just notice that it's a lot. You don't necessarily have to solve it or tackle it. And then I would say to reach out. I know that's really hard. It's really hard, especially when you're dealing with so much as a mom of a child that's got medical issues, but reaching out to a friend or a family member, or heck, it could even be a stranger that's sitting next to you in the cafeteria, and just sharing a little bit can be really helpful. So you know you're not alone when you're doing these exercises. Talking to a therapist is always good too.
That's great. I love your advice there. Just talking more about kind of working through these things and the process of using the book, what would you give as a guideline for kind of setting yourself up for success? How should you try to devote a certain amount of time to them per week, or kind of set up some goals for yourself? How would you recommend kind of working through that as a process?
So that probably depends on each person individually. As somebody told me, I needed to do it, like I have to prepare it for the week for the book club that I'm doing. And we do a chapter a week and it's a lot. And so I don't do all the exercises. I like maybe pick out three or four because I wrote them. I kind of have an advantage. but I think exercise a week is a great idea. It depends how in depth you want to get with it. If you want to do an exercise and then you spend time thinking about it and contemplating it and being mindful in your mind of what you experience with that, you can extend that. Or you could knock out a couple in a row if that's more your style. You could skip exercises. Some of them might not resonate with you, and some of them may be kind of too cheesy or something that you just don't really don't get anything from. I certainly have certain exercises that are my favorites in the book that I enjoy, but I think it's different for everybody.
Can you explain what your book club, is this the book club on the book? So do you guys get together and talk about the exercises you've done?
Yeah. So the woman that leads it is a photographer who does, and she's doing a whole self-empowerment, self-love type thing. She's in Virginia. And so she has gotten some women, I guess, through social media and getting women together who have the book, and she facilitates it. So I'm like a member. She facilitates and she gives a chapter and she just highlights certain things that spoke out to her, and everybody has done some of the exercises and she asks people to share their experiences with the exercises. So it's really kind of neat to hear how people are using it and what they're getting out of it.
And do you meet once a week?
Once a week. It's once a week for an hour. And you know, if you can make it, great. If you can't, it's not, you know, you're not stuck to having, I think it goes maybe for 6 weeks. This is the second round of it. So there that we've done.
Can we think about maybe doing something like with some of the moms after they get the book? I don't know.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That's a really cool idea. Do you see within the group that the different ways in which people are working through the exercises themselves. And so everyone has their own customized process, I'm sure.
Yeah. And there's, sometimes I know there's one chapter, I think it's the one on healthy relationships. I just think it's a doozy. It's very intense. It's got a lot of heavy duty information in there about healthy relationships and boundary setting and advocating for yourself and those kinds of things, which can be really uncomfortable. Yeah. So I know that that one was hard, but some of the women have had a harder time with earlier chapters with the whole idea of the negative critical voice and beginning to realize it. So it's just everybody's at a different place. And it's kind of neat to see everybody encouraging. I remember there was one group meeting where people were reading, I guess, a love letter that is one of the exercises that you could write to yourself. And they read it out loud and it was vulnerable and sweet and cool and really powerful when it's shared in that way.
Is the process different if someone weren't interested in that and really just wanted to work through it more on an individual basis? Does the process work differently? Or are you reaching kind of the same goals?
I think the process, it depends. You know, if you need more structure because you're afraid that you would procrastinate and you'd never get this done or just sit there collecting dust, even though you really want to make changes, you're in the contemplation phase of change. And so at that point, then adding structure and saying, okay, let's do an exercise or two or three a week, setting up some sort of goal. I think the book club does give structure and accountability.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things with the self-love work in general. It takes intentional and consistent practice. It doesn't just happen magically, unfortunately. I wish we could just snap our fingers and be like, I love myself. You might think that if you go on like social media, people taking pictures, right, and think that that's what self-love is, but it's not. It's so much more than that. And it's even more than self-care. So I think that's the key. You know, when we think, a lot of people will use them interchangeably. Right. And self-care is a component to self-love. It's an important component to self-love, but it doesn't just stop with taking a bubble bath or having a massage. It's so much more doing that deeper work on yourself.
That's why I love that comment that the easiest way to provide self-care to yourself is to practice loving kindness to yourself. That's the main reason. Like, that's like, everybody can do that. You don't need to go to get your like nails painted to do that. You can just start talking kindly to yourself.
In the shower sometimes. I mean, literally, how many times have you taken a shower and you're like, did I use shampoo or conditioner? I will have to wash my hair 3 times before I remember that I've done it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not mindful. I'm thinking about a whole bunch of stuff I've got to do. So one of the exercises is practicing just mindfulness, just feeling the water on you in the shower and smelling the soap and being able to just kind of cleanse yourself in that moment of any negative emotions, have them go down the drain. That is practicing self-love and self-care. It can take 5 minutes. So it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It doesn't have to take tons of time. It's the intentional and consistent practice with it, even if it's 5 minutes a day.
Megan, you talked about kind of as a first step, noticing negative self-talk and those emotions, and then starting to work through the process of developing self-love. As you're working through developing self-love, what might you notice is changing within yourself? Like, what goals could you expect to be meeting as you're working on self-love and becoming stronger in those areas?
So it's interesting. I think externally, you may start to notice changes first. So sometimes in how you may disappoint people, you may have to say no, you may have to set boundaries, you may have to advocate for your child in the hospital setting and not necessarily be super nice. Whatever that is, sometimes we have to go and extend that self-love outward. It's going to change our relationships and how we show up in the world. You can even look at body language as an example. I think there's an exercise in the book about, you know, we don't love ourselves, we shrink, we get smaller, we don't take up space. When we love ourselves, we stand up straight, we look people in the eye, we use confident body language to make our presence known. So we definitely see it externally. And then internally, I would say, outside of being kind to yourself, there should be something stirring inside some sort of passion, some sort of connection to your gifts. You know, we all have our own special gifts. I think connecting to my inner child has been a huge part of my healing and kind of honoring her. If she wants to go run outside and play and have fun in the sun and find little flowers in the grass, then that's going to make me feel happy. And if I didn't love myself, I would not take time to do that kind of stuff. So I think you start to feel differently inside when you become inspired and have passion, and you want to share that with the world.
That's great. How do you make note of your personal progress in your self-love development? And do you celebrate those achievements at all as you're working along your process?
I struggle still to put myself out there or to be proud of my accomplishments. I mean, even writing the book's done really successful. I will minimize it and be like, oh yeah. Like, so I have not mastered it for sure. But I think that I noticed that I'm truly genuinely happier and have peace within my soul. Mm-hmm. Within myself, that I feel content, I guess, even when crap is falling all around me and bad things are happening outside of me, there's something within me that I feel like is a light that can shine even through a hurricane. That was mm-hmm. a really bad metaphor. And there are exercises in the book that are designed to, like, little assessments that I came up with that you can do at the beginning. And then I think they have them there at the end to see if you've changed any of your mindset or your way of thinking about things. That's there too. So mm-hmm. I also noticed that my relationships with people are healthier. I'm setting better boundaries. I'm not overextending myself. I am giving myself permission to not be everything and for everyone, that I need to be able to take care of myself. So that's, for me, my biggest change.
I think that's something, especially that medically complex caregivers could use a lot, because, you know, you do have to be, you're not only your child's mother, you're your child's, you know, scheduler, their therapist, their nurse, their, you know, advocate. And sometimes it's okay to say no to therapies, to certain, even doctor's appointments. Like, you don't have to go in and see the eye doctor every 3 months, you know, like, I mean, depending on, like, once you get to a certain point, like, you know, you can say no or choose to spend time just being your child's mom. Yeah. And setting boundaries in that capacity too.
Even for holidays with family, you know, extended family might expect, you know, they want to see everybody, and you may just be too tired.
Yeah.
Some time to yourself. So those boundaries can ripple over into lots of different areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like this is really, it's a lifelong thing. So you don't just work through the book and then you're done and you've developed the self-love and you're good to go. It's really mm-hmm. something you have to keep coming back to and continuously work on in your life and just develop that strength over and over again and get better at it.
I thought I had it down. I've recovered from an eating disorder through, like, mm-hmm. well, by the time I finished college, I was like, oh, look, I'm so proud of all the hard work I've done. Well, yeah, that was hard work. And I did accomplish a lot, but there was so much more that I needed to learn. And I'm still learning even mm-hmm. to this day. So,
I know, Megan, you've worked through the exercises multiple times as you've, you pulled on your experiences in writing them, you wrote them, you've gone through and done the exercises numerous times yourself. Do you find that they bring up different emotions, or you have different experiences each time that you work through the exercises?
Yeah, I think that I forget which one it was. There was one, I ended up doing the exercise and it didn't make me feel better. It made me feel worse. I was either one on, like, either people that support you, or maybe it was more of just what are some of the, it was the negative thinking one. And I was like, I have a lot of work to do.
That's kind of a part of the like, sometimes I've noticed the certain exercises, I mean, I haven't gotten completely through the book yet, but, like, there's maybe the first time I looked at one, I think it was like writing a letter to, like, your 13-year-old self or your younger self. When I first looked at it, I was like, oh, I can't do that. And mm-hmm. it made me, like, sad to even think about it or something. But then now I look at it and I'm like, okay, like, I don't know, maybe sometimes you just have to, what's the word? like inch yourself towards it. And it, I can't think of the therapy term, but it's kind of like, maybe it's like desensitizing yourself to it, and it becomes, I don't know, maybe part of the process.
Yeah, you kind of build up slowly, you know, with your behaviorally doing the exercises. I think the book was set out in the beginning, it's all like nurturing and loving and supportive. And then every once in a while, there's a zinger in there. Supportive, and then there's a zinger. That's how I do therapy. You know, a lot of times it's holding space. If you just support and validate, you don't make change. You just But if you just are making change, that's too much sometimes, and it's too vulnerable and it's too hard. So you need to have the both of them happening at the same time. So when I did an exercise that made me feel bad, I would find one that then would make me feel happy. That's kind of a strategy that I used. I'd be like, oh wait, this one's like, what are my gifts and talents? Let me do this one.
Or I love how there's quotes sprinkled through. I love quotes. So I love how there's just like, you know, you could even just open it up and look at a quote, and that can be the supportive thing or the validating thing that you do that day. And
mantra that you just are like, wow, this really spoke to me. I'm going to just think about it. That's one simple thing that you can do. So it's not even having to do the exercises necessarily. It's just setting the intention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a great tip. So it doesn't need to be overwhelming. You really can just take it in very bite-sized pieces, even as small as just pulling a line from the book to focus on.
Yeah, I think when one of the women in the workbook or in the group, because we have like a little Facebook group, she was like, I forget what she said, but she was like, oh, I do not want to do this. Like, it was just so painful, like in a good way, but it's work. It's, mm-hmm. And that's, you know, like you said earlier, the self-love, for moms of medically complex children, we don't want to add extra work that's going to feel like a burden or be really overwhelming or challenging. And the workbook's design, there is compassion and kindness and encouragement throughout. Through those quotes and through the way that it's communicated. And there's a lot of really positive things to build you up and help you feel, you know, that you have lots of gifts and things to offer the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So another thing with the difficult, if it brings up difficult parts for you. So one thing I noticed along like my caregiving journey with June was that, you know, we're all like, let's say you put like 10 medically complex moms together. Like there's so many different baselines. Like somebody may be here because they have financial resources. Somebody may be here because they don't have financial resources. Somebody may be here because they have good coping mechanisms already built in, but somebody may have a lot of financial resources, but not a lot of healthy coping mechanisms. Like we're all coming from different backgrounds, yet we're like thrown into this, and like all these different factors affect the caregiving experience, because it can affect your confidence or can affect what you can provide your children. And I don't know, like your triggers are differently. So like, you know, you may be upset, and you may be like talking negatively to yourself and more angry or more reactive or more defensive. I don't know what the question is in here, but I just think that there's so many factors and that can go into what kind of caregiver you are for your child. And, you know, the obvious one is financial, but some of it is also like, you know, how you're taking care of yourself. And I don't know what the right question is, but I just wanted to
add to the complexity of medically complex. It's not just medically complex too. It's complex on every level.
And yeah.
The word. And I think that the common theme is that you all are struggling collectively together with children with complex.
Yeah.
That add that extra stress that not anyone else can really understand unless you've probably been through it. You know, and the workbook obviously wasn't designed for that in mind. It's more of a general thing, but the coping mechanisms, your faith, your support system, your financial resources, all of those things play a part in how you get through something like this. And, you know, the lessons that you learn along the way, which I'm sure the moms could write a book themselves. That would be pretty
well, I guess, yeah. And I know that this wasn't intended for, written for that, but I can see how it can add, it can at least help put, you know, maybe people who don't have, and I was one, like I said, I didn't realize that the negative self-talk that I was doing to myself, that added to certain kind of, just defensiveness. There was, you know, somebody may not have been even like criticizing how I was caring for my child, but I took it as a criticism and got super defensive. Like just even something like that, noticing that can change how, I'm getting lost in my own thought, but I just think that this book can help level the playing field a little bit on how everybody is treating themselves, so, which can only help medically complex caregivers. So
yeah, you really, it goes back to knowing yourself, knowing what your triggers are, knowing what your thoughts are, knowing and what you need to work on, that awareness. And the book is very specific, practical exercises. So it's helpful sometimes to have that as a guide, because self-love is so nebulous. How do you just do that? And what does that look like for specific populations? It's different and in different contexts. So. Mm-hmm.
Jenny, I think talking about the level playing field, caring for a child with a medically complex condition requires so much emotional strength. And so working on developing this self-love will help you build that emotional strength. And then that gets everyone kind of on a better level as they're entering this caregiving stage and working through all of it.
Yes. And so when June was alive, I went to therapy all the time. I mean, I still go to therapy all the time, but when June was alive, I went to therapy a lot. But I also did yoga a lot. And I remember, and I also still do yoga, but I remember, this was like a foreign concept to me, because I remember being in like chair pose and the yoga instructor at the time, like holding it really long and saying something along the lines of, you're practicing being in discomfort. So in life, you can be in discomfort, but he said, like, you can get out and go back in and, you know, take them all. And like, that was also something that I learned, like, you know, like you said, building that emotional strength, like building that muscle of being okay, not being okay, coming out of it, getting back in. It's just like, And I remember when June would be crying, crying for like hours, like being uncomfortable in like listening to that and just remembering like, okay, I can come in and out of this. It's just like yoga. I can, you know, go take a shower or I can leave for a little bit, but like, yeah, just, you know, and this book reminds me of that too. It's just like stuff that you can practice to help you in the moment.
That's like mindfulness. I mean, that's a huge part of yoga is learning to be in the present moment, even when your moment sucks.
Yes.
Noticing it, observing it without judging it as good or bad. You're just there. This is just what's happening.
Yeah.
When we can look at things from a mindful perspective, it's just a moment. When we're worried about the future, we're having anxiety. When we're thinking about the past, we're having depression. When we're in the moment, it's just that moment in time, and it will pass. There will be a new moment that happens shortly after. You can pretty much get through anything when you're in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's a skill that has to be developed, and it takes intentional practice doing that. In the beginning, you may be like, I don't have time to do that. Well, when you're in the shower, when you're going to the bathroom, when you're eating something, be aware of what it tastes like, notice what it feels like, the texture, the smell, even if it's just for 1 second, you're practicing mindfulness. And then you can apply it to the harder times when it's more emotional. But in the beginning, you can do it on very tangible, concrete things.
Megan, just like with mindfulness, do you apply in your daily life some of the exercises that are included in the workbook?
Yeah, I think mindfulness for me has been a game changer throughout my life. Learning that as a therapist and how to teach that to people, I think I've just absorbed it somehow without practicing it intentionally. And now I just do it. If I'm driving and I get frustrated with somebody, I'm not always great at it. Sometimes, you know, I may get frustrated and yell or say something, but what I try to do is step back and just be like, okay, that car had a reason to get in front of me. It's just an observation I'm going to make right now. I treat everything as facts. And then, you know, it's not meant to say that we don't judge things that are not fair, or we don't judge things that are harmful. We notice them, and you can't change something unless you're mindful of it first. So mindfulness sounds very passive. It's just kind of like, okay, yeah, whatever. You still have to be mindful before you can actually make change and change something that needs to be changed. Or you can, sometimes you have to accept that you can't change things and that this is what it is. And that's very hard.
And as a closing question, is there anything else that you want to tell parents of medically complex children as they're receiving your book and beginning to think about developing self-love and embarking on that journey?
I would probably say for medically complex families that the work that gets done in terms of caring for your child is way beyond even what it can even be fathomable. Just the amount of stress and the amount of overwhelming day-to-day sacrifices that get made. And so in order to do that, you have to be able to have a well to tap into. And so self-love, we're basically digging a well and filling it with something that you can use to then be able to do what you need to do as a mom.
I love that. I love that it's digging a well. You have to start with self-love for sure. Yeah. So thank you, Megan, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be, and on your day off, to be a part of our Navigating Neurological Conditions webinar. We really appreciate your insight on caregivers' mental health and why this is so important. We love your book, and we are so excited to get it in the hands of the moms we serve. And thanks everyone for tuning in. For questions, please visit junejessie.org and reach out to us on our social channels. And I know, Megan, you're on Instagram too. So if you want to share, or social, maybe if you want to share anything and a way to reach out to you too, if you're comfortable with that.
I actually just started an Instagram, but it's not something I've ever needed to do, but it's been really cool connecting. That's how I got in touch with you.
Also stay tuned. We may be talking at June Jessie Memorial Foundation, how we can maybe do one of these book clubs, maybe not once a week, but maybe once a month or something. I think that sounds so cool and fun and supportive and just another way moms can connect. So anyway,
great idea.
So that sounds fun.
Thanks so much, Megan.